Thank you for logging on and watching, listening to the Business Insights podcast supported by Leesay Sales Rep at Inc. 5000 Company, helping companies grow leads, get clients, and close more business across the country. Business Insights podcast is supported by Leesay Sales Rep, and we provide good content to our listeners. And today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Ayelet Hirschfeld, who is the owner of Diversitas Psychotherapy, and we're going to talk about post-COVID issues and trauma in the workplace and what's going on now and things that we see. And we're going to have a really good conversation today around that and learn and be empathetic and understand what people are going through and thinking and the like. So, Dr. Ayelet, thank you for being on the show. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. And it is really a pleasure to join Gilbert. And it's a fascinating topic. And I would say part of it is that we're all affected. I don't think that there is a single person that was not affected by COVID. And I am confident that we are all experiencing some kind of post-trauma symptoms, some kind of PTSD symptoms associated with that fear of losing one's life during that pandemic that affected so many people and probably triggered them in different ways. And so I'm wondering if I can respond to any questions that you might have or any topics that are of interest to you, to the audience.
Yeah, when we had spoken offline before the discussion online, and obviously here in the podcast and the video series regarding post-COVID trauma in the workplace, that we've seen in the marketplace as an organization, but also just our clients and the like, where many people went remote, right, to work from home in March of 2020 when everything closed down. We are 4 years since the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, we've been out of it now for a few years. I think, what, about 2 years, Dr. Ayelet, more or less?
2 years, 1.5 year that we're kind of like somewhat in person, right? Kind of getting used to going back to in-person interaction with other human beings.
That's right. So a lot of people obviously went remote, those who could go remote because they had jobs that allowed them to do that, many white collar professionals and the like, versus like a restaurant worker or a hotel worker who has to be out there in a room or in a restaurant dealing with people. So a lot of people in the, I'll say, the white collar professional industry, tech, software, things like that, went into remote mode and, working from home. And then obviously that isolated a lot of people, meaning they didn't have to see them face to face for a while, meaning in the public square. So that has gotten people into a certain psychology, from what I understand. I'm not a clinician, but you are the one that holds the PhD in psychology. You're a psychologist, right? So now people got used to working remotely, and a lot of things happen there. So there's a resistance, hesitancy in certain aspects for people to meet, see people face to face, do events, even though they're happening now. But there's still a group of people that don't want to be around a lot of people. And that, I think, was kind of started me to think about post-COVID trauma, that these people are, they weren't like that before. So help us explain to us that psychology around that.
Of course. And so I'm a clinical psychologist and a Lacanian psychoanalyst. Mm-hmm. So when I look at phenomena like that, and I would say a lot of people are affected, and I assume it affected interaction globally, then I'm also very aware of the subjective significance to each and every person. So everyone is affected differently, and they are affected differently based on their experience of prior trauma or stressors and how they digested COVID, in a sense. There is what you speak about is a phobic reaction, right? The fear of the other, fearing other people and not being able to be close to others, leading to significant phobias. And I think that that's something that we as a society need to speak about to be able to help others be aware of that so that they can seek treatment when needed and not stay closed in their homes out of fear of the other, which is an interesting phenomenon I would think about in general in terms of where the world is today, fear of the other.
Yeah, and that's kind of where we are in general in a whole bunch of areas.
Right.
You're right,
It's
right.
COVID.
Exactly. And you know what's interesting is that I wonder, and I wonder if other people wonder the same thing, that the people who are fearful of meeting and seeing and being in large environments because of the risk of getting infected again with COVID, because it's still out there in certain aspects, and then they have an RSV, right, virus as well that's out there in certain aspects. And I wonder if the people who are pulling back and are still fearful to engage and be in the public square a lot, I wonder if they had COVID multiple times, you know, because some people have gotten it one, two, three times. So I wonder if there's an association with that, although we don't have the research, right? Is that are they the ones that are experiencing this trauma and really don't want to go out because they had it multiple times? Go ahead.
You're talking about the cumulative effect of trauma. And I would say everyone is exposed to traumas. And throughout our lives, we're exposed to many different traumas, usually as individuals, different ages, and we resolve them or did not in different ways. And when trauma hits, it makes one reread all past events. When one is exposed to trauma, it can always trigger a PTSD reaction, a post-traumatic reaction that can be full-blown PTSD or it can be subthreshold PTSD. So I would say perhaps, and I'm not sure about the research of the cumulative effect to being infected a few times by COVID, but perhaps it has to do more with whether COVID hit that individual as an event that made them feel fearful for their life and triggered a PTSD reaction. So it's their interpretation of the situation they were at. You can take two different people. One of them might have almost died from COVID but felt protected for whatever reason. Maybe it's a belief, maybe they believed in God, whatever it is, right? And that protected them. And they experienced it as a trauma, but it did not yield PTSD symptoms. You can look at another person and potentially they were affected by COVID very lightly, but they were aware of the risk and they were very fearful that they were going to die. Their interpretation of the event is enough, as COVID is a real had carried a real threat of life, to create PTSD. And so at that moment that PTSD is triggered, then everything gets triggered. It's rereading of all past events. And again, we don't know how we are affected because PTSD can have delayed onset, meaning that we do not present with post-traumatic symptoms today. Might be that 30% of the population is presenting with it a few years from now. I mean, if you think about Vietnam, for example, the rate of PTSD there was about lifetime 30%. So, I mean, I would say that would be, there is also a difference because man-made trauma is triggering much more and usually leads to more significant PTSD reaction than nature-made. Remember, we also had an interpretation about COVID. How did that happen? Those that interpreted it as man-made were maybe even more sensitive to develop post-trauma reaction. So there are different factors when we talk about trauma. There is also the nature of the stressor itself. For example, if you're affected by someone who is very close to you, that's going to be, usually it's going to yield a more immediate trauma response because man-made trauma is much more affecting than nature made. So when we look at lifetime rates of an earthquake, for example, versus combat, there is a difference there. So there are many, many different factors when we look at traumas, and there are many different departments investigating it, such as the PTSD research program at the San Francisco VA, whether it is in combat, whether it is among police, whether it is following earthquakes or following pandemics. What's interesting is the notion of the fear of the other, because look at the world right now and where we are. Would you say that there is a global fear of the other?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would say that in the U.S. and everywhere else, there's a global fear of the other in a whole bunch of different areas, right? Not only with COVID, just in general, and COVID may have been the precursor for all of that, right? That kind of started that fear. It's there. My curiosity for me, I'm curious as to the people who have long COVID, right, that are still struggling, their health is long, is affected long term, some of them not able to work, or they can work very minimal because they have the after effects of having COVID, and I wonder the trauma on them because now they've never got rid of it. They're li like living with this thing.
But that's introducing another facet of the stressor, interestingly. There is the facet of the stressor of the fear for life, but then when you look at it also within the context of a disease, right? And then you can compare it to, for example, cancer that someone's living with. It's a chronic stressor for those who have long COVID that they need to live with, right? So that becomes a chronic stressor where the threat for, in that case, it's not, where a cancer would be a threat for life that someone lives with chronically. With respect to long COVID, it's different, right? There is the aftermath. But I would say the long COVID in itself is not going to yield post-traumatic symptoms that are similar to one who experiences threat for life. There is a difference. We tend to look at traumas as like big T's and small T's and differentiate them to stressors and really like trauma, because the essence, in essence, trauma is fear for losing one's life, one's sense of physical integrity, seeing someone else in danger. And so there is the hallmark of an imminent threat. With the long COVID, there is the notion of dealing with a chronic medical issue, but not the notion of chronic fear of death, unless that individual interpreted that event as continuously fearful of COVID itself. And that carries, I would say, in that sense, probably psychologically a fear that can be worked through, because that's a fear of what already happened, which is very common in trauma reactions, right? We're afraid of what happened. We're projecting it onto the future, and we need to be reminded that it's not happening again. It already happened.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And you clarified for me a question that I had that came up with the long COVID, and you kind of interjected into your response about cancer. So if a patient has cancer, they beat the cancer, right? Remission goes away. They're still living with that fear of it coming back because they thought, cancer, you get a big C, you're gonna die. Right. So they're living with that fear, even though it's gone in the back of their head, like they're grateful, but they're living with the fear. And that's a different trauma than the long COVID trauma, if you believe it's a chronic disease, but you're not going to die. Is that
Right. That's
okay?
correct. But not only that, I would say you're introducing an interesting point, but with cancer, for example, it's an ongoing fear of life. So for the affected individual, it's a daily struggle. Every day is a stressor. And then for years after, there is the fear of reoccurrence, meaning that battle for one's life until one is cleared a few years after, right? That it's very much real. and that's usually affecting the individual and the family. Whereas with COVID, you can see a situation where probably the environment would say, well, will not understand because it might seem as if it's excessive fear. So we look at all of these factors when we work through something, even though because it was a trauma, that individual can be extremely fearful of catching COVID again if they interpreted the event as they were going to die, basically. So a lot has to do with the interpretation of the event.
No, that's great. Thank you for clarifying that. And I know that people in my circle and also just people in general, maybe in yours as well, we've probably seen people, I know I have, that are driving around in their cars with masks, and they're coming out or they're coming out of their car in a parking lot in a public space, open square. Public fresh air, walking around in a park, and I've seen them, and they're walking around with a mask. I begin to immediately think, and I shared this with you online. I'll share with the audience. I immediately think that they've been conditioned. This is me thinking now. They've been conditioned to wear this mask for so long that they forgot. Or just didn't process a lot, this is me thinking, process logically, I really don't need this right now because I'm in my car and I'm outside in the public air. But but they've gotten so used to it, it became almost an appendage of their body and or the feet. It could have been a fear. They may have had it three times. And then they're kind of so fearful there. We don't know the reason they're wearing it. But I think I had shared with you that I was just fascinated why. Someone would drive in the car with a mask or be walking in the park with a mask. Oh, now, if you're going to go into a supermarket, I understand you get out of the car, you put your mask on, and walk into a supermarket because you're interacting with people, right? You may have that fear. I get that. But in general, just in other scenarios where you wouldn't necessarily need one, I begin to think, what's going on here? And so help us understand that, what could be going on. I know you're not diagnosing people because you don't know who they are, but what's going on here?
Well, how about you tell me what does it trigger in you when you see someone
Oh, you're gonna
walking
put me
with?
on the chair.
How does it make you feel?
Yeah, what you're gonna put me on the psych chair?
Well,
It's
for a
okay.
bit.
All right. Well, for me, I'm wondering. I'm thinking that they are being extreme, because they're not processing logically. That okay, I'm in an open air space, I'm in my private car, no one's with me. I think that they're so fearful of getting something, right? One, two, they've been trained, they've been, I won't say indoctrinated is a bad word, but they've been trained, to wear this mask. And it's like they just don't know how to stop wearing it. So I think that they've mentally lost their ability to reason out, why do I wear this thing? That's what I feel. I begin questioning their capability to separate, the environment they're in. And like I say, if you're in their car, you don't need it. If you're walking in a park, you don't need it. But if you're going to a supermarket, you need it because you feel you're going to get sick. Going to a restaurant around people, you feel because you feel you're going to get sick. You say, okay, I'm going to wear it then. But they've gotten so fearful in general that they lose logic. That's me. That's what I think.
So they're masking themselves, they're covering themselves. Potentially, possibly, they feel affected and not wanting to expose themselves in a way to the other. In some way, they are masked. Masked, protected, or feeling like the mask is part of their body, potentially even.
Like an
Used,
appendage.
right, but it does trigger most likely a sense of something from the other. I mean, as a clinician sitting at the office, post-COVID, once we switch from virtual to being in person with a mask, a lot of clients had a very significant reaction to the mask. They did not feel comfortable because then there is the lack of facial expressions. You don't know what the other is Part of interpretation of human interaction is the facial expressions. When that's lacking, then there is a very, very significant component of the interaction that's missed that will, in a sense, lead to mistrust, I would say. The notion of the mask being masked. Now, for adults, that's one thing, but for kids, it was extremely detrimental to their development. If you think about all those kids that could not go to preschool, that could not interact with others, that were probably just sitting in front of the television, that were surrounded by adults that were masked without being able to have the facial expression exchange, in a time or during a time where autism rates are skyrocketing, this is a mental health disaster. I mean, I don't know if someone is looking at the autism rates in preschools, or at all following the pandemic, but I would imagine they would increase significantly because even in floor time, what we do is, there is the facial expression is key. And so we're a lot of kids are on the spectrum, but still benefit from that interaction. Without it, they will probably do worse. So again, I would assume that autism rates would skyrocket, and we probably have not yet seen the effect of what COVID really did. And that would mostly affect, I mean, we can attest to how much it's affecting us, and we are adults, but how much has it affected the children?
Oh,
I
wow.
don't think that they have the capability of communicating that, and that was denied from them. And it's going to probably be carried with them throughout their life, as you say, potentially for them, even much more so, fear of the other.
Yeah, that's very interesting. We're talking with Dr. Ayelet Hirschfeld, PhD psychologist at the Versitas Psychotherapy based out of California around COVID, mass COVID trauma and the workplace. Talking a little bit about the obviously the workplace environment. Everybody used to be, not everybody, general statement, used to be used to going to work in an office. Then COVID hit, and then the ones who could go remote went remote. And now that everything's opened up, you see this pushback from employees saying that, oh, can I work 2 days from home and 3 days in the office? This kind of virtual hybrid kind of model, right? Office based, right? And then virtual. I'm curious if that has to do with it with partially fear of, being in the workplace with people, or they just want to be able to work virtually because, hey, this is cool. Allows me to do other stuff when I'm home working, right? I can go to the store. I can go, like depending on what kind of position you have, you could, you don't have to be at a desk, on a screen for 8 hours, depending upon what you're doing. So I kind of wonder if there's connection between COVID trauma, is seeing people, or really just, I like this. It worked well for me. I'd like to continue to do that. And productivity had gone down significantly from on the virtual team. I mean, people who were working virtually, where all the CEOs of these huge companies, they were saying, you know what? Our big ones, they said, you got to come back to the office because they are not productive. So that kind of ties into, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to go shopping with my mask on. I want to go shopping, right? And so I wonder if the virtual hybrid model has to really do with being sick and afraid of being around people, or really just trying to take advantage of the system because the system set up a mechanism for you to work from home. I mean, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm wondering if there is also potentially something that was a question that came up probably for a lot of individuals, which was the balance between work and family life that allowed them the opportunity to be more at home, potentially for those who have never really been. And I'm not sure about the effect and the family dynamics around that, but potentially led to people questioning what it is they want, how do they want their day to look like, how do they want their life to look like, and potentially introduce a choice that was not there before. And I don't think that we can really backtrack and take it all back and say, well, we're all going back to the office. I would think that there are professions and there will be subject matters where you need to be in person, where it was an issue. For example, when there was a question of security, discussions over Zoom sometimes can be not secure, even when dealing with, for example, veterans and speaking with someone who is somewhere else, right, in like Iraq or something like that. These things usually they're very well equipped to be in person because they have the structure and it was compromised. So that I would say that's another element, I think. So there are professions and individuals that need to be present at the office. And I thinking that, and as you've indicated, there were people that were during COVID there all the time, those that were service professionals that needed to serve others, whether it was at restaurants or the doctors and nurses, et cetera, that were exposed to it all the time. So I don't know how it's going to look like because there will be some professions where there is choice and people, again, it changed everything. So there is now the possibility, even in education, to study remotely. And so there is some flexibility potentially. Maybe that's a bit scary. Then there are professions where that flexibility was compromising a lot of different facets, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. I think that also in the workplace is interesting if you are a healthcare provider, or in a position, in a place where you're interacting with a lot of people. And those jobs, those environments required that the employees and also people coming into the building had to wear a face covering, a mask, that depending upon who you were, solicited a particular reaction. Meaning some was like, okay, I will comply because they're telling me to do that. But then you got the other people are saying, you know what, I won't comply because, I'm not letting you dictate to me what I'm going to do with my body and my life, right? So there's you got this trauma and anger on one side, and you got the other people who are compliant and going along with whatever is being told to them. So
Right.
I remember there was anger in many in employment situations, airline travel, trains,
Right.
where you were imposing them. This is government. You're imposing, and in some jobs, private
Right.
industry, imposing requirements on everybody. And that created anger and also, I believe, trauma to the people who didn't want to comply. The other ones who were complying, okay, they were like, oh, I'm going to do it anyway. And that's. So talk a little bit about that. The anger around that.
Very interesting, I would say. I mean, it's very interesting to see how people react in different situations. And when there is a mandate, when there is a requirement or a need to follow a certain regulation, and some individuals comply and some do not. Some object, some reject. And I would assume that's part of human nature. I mean, you could see that the variability, and there were some that responded with rage and some that were fine. I mean, that was not a big deal. That's a mandate, that's a requirement. Okay. So you could see the different personalities or subjectivity in a sense. And then those that were very angry, the question is, what were they really angry about? Is it about needing to follow a mandate? Why they felt potentially that there was no freedom? Something was taken from them. What does it trigger for them? Probably triggers something completely different. So there is something in that. I would say those that react with anger, with rage, there is usually something going on for them. It evoked something.
And it's different for a lot of people, why they got angry, and why the other ones, were compliant, the a lot of moving pieces around the treatment of people that were, lack of a better word, anti-mask. They
Anti
were
vaccines, anti-mask,
right. They were more about freedom and liberty, and let me do what I want to do. Don't impose on me your restrictions. But then they were outcast. They were the media was all around, supporting, masking because we didn't know what was going on, and with the disease, right? The illness, the COVID. So it was a lot of that. So they were people that were felt ostracized because I didn't want to do that. So then the whole system came down on them. This is my analysis, came down on them because they weren't compliant when you should have be compliant because everybody else is doing it and therefore you're not. So there was trauma thrown at, well, anger thrown at them, the ones who were not compliant. So which is very, very interesting. It didn't go both ways, at least in my opinion anyway. But
I mean, it raises the question of how does one voices oneself or asserts oneself in a way that is also accepting the law, societal norms, limitations, and working within that system while accepting that there is a limit. And so if something is imposed, then there are ways to contest it. The question is, how do you contest it? How
Exactly.
do you about it?
That's a question. And obviously there was a lot of things that went on around that, that whole those policies and requirements and the pushback and by most people who did not want to comply, with mandates, government mandates, requirements, particularly when you live in a country that has liberty as one of its foundational tenets, freedom.
Right,
So now you're telling people all you got to do is say A, B, and C, and no, this is America. So there was all that, and that kind of pushback on that. But
Well, that's a very fascinating topic. I mean, the quest for freedom, yet people are wanting dictators to rule them. So that's a completely different subject. I'm not gonna touch that. I'm gonna put it aside. But that it's the quest for freedom is a fascinating subject.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. And yeah, it is. And I kind of in the context of COVID, and it goes back to the issue when you were talking about 20 minutes ago about was it man-made or was it natural, and things like that, and how that and or man or a natural man-made war. If you're in a war and that causes a certain trauma versus a man-made a natural disaster. Causes a different
Exactly.
kind of trauma. So you look at COVID, was it man-made? Was it natural? And that brings up a whole host of issues around that, and anger and the like.
Here, I mean, and it's interesting the context of the mask, and one can only wonder now within this. I mean, it's going to be triggering for each one in a different way. When you see someone at the park masked, you're going to think one thing. Someone else might think something different. And I would think that, I mean, man-made terrorism is like the most extreme, frightening thing that can happen. And that's, I mean, that's. It's like where we are today in the world, not a great moment.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think that I wonder if going back to the workplace conversation, if there is there's been discussions in certain states about allowing the state itself to, if something happens like this again, meaning COVID or some kind of disease that multiplies among people, airborne, that kind of thing, that they would impose upon private employers, requirements for masking and vaccine, and if somebody gets sick. You have to have procedures in place to get them out of the workplace for a week, and they have to come back negative, and you got to keep them 6 feet away. So placing these burdens, what I call regulatory burden, now we're talking business, regulatory burdens on private businesses if something happens in a particular state, and there's conversation in certain legislatures around that issue, In versus if you want to do government, okay, you want to do schools, okay, you want to do hospital, fine. That's government run stuff. But if you want to come into the personal, I guess, private workplace, which is really most of America's employment is in small business. Now you're gonna dictate to them how to
Right.
operate, and now
Completely.
you have to implement this. So we had a in the we had a conversation with some business owners in a particular state around this, that they're looking at implementing all these requirements. And so if you take the person out of the workplace, the employee who's sick, and you have to follow all these procedures before they come back to work, meaning be out of the workplace for a week. You got to come back with two negative tests. And once they're back in the office, you got to put them on a mask, keep them away from people. So we're implementing hypothetical. This is being implemented in a certain state, right? Now the employer say, so who's gonna make the sale to the customer? Who's gonna deliver the product to the customer? Who's gonna serve the customer while you're imposing some of the regulatory requirements on my business, right? Yeah, because you think so. If you're gonna pay me for that, okay, then fine. But the government couldn't answer that. Say, well, that's gonna you're responsible. Wait a minute. Anyway, that's I wonder about those requirements and how that affects employers, employees, the psychology, that kind of thing.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here because for a moment, my association went into when we don't regulate businesses, the question is the stake, there is the expectancy, and what is the worst that can happen, right? So, whereas, for example, in a psychologist's office, a psychologist sits, someone comes in, it's a personal discussion. They can decide whether a mask will be worn or just say, oh, I'm feeling okay, I'm feeling okay, fine. And there is maybe less need for that. Let's take a look, for example, at a preschool that has a pool. And because it's a private business, they could have a pool gated, but then sometimes they leave the pool open.
Okay.
The stakes there are extremely high. Someone can drown. They don't want to be regulated, right? There are different levels of risk. And I think that that's how it needs to be approached. There are areas that are not regulated enough where it's very dangerous. And so that's where I'll play devil's advocate in the
No,
sense
that's
of.
fine. I appreciate that. That's interesting. That's an interesting story, example, very interesting of the open pool.
Very common.
And so then
Common.
the
And then
challenge be, I'm sorry, go
businesses
ahead.
be upset because you want to regulate them or be even upset if someone says something. So it's, I mean, shouldn't that be regulated always?
Yeah, I guess it depends on, and what's challenging here, it depends on when you begin to look at certain industries and you want to regulate certain industries based on, say, infectious disease and COVID and spreading and all those kind of things. If something else comes down the pipe with some other kind of communicable disease that spreads, you have to look at different businesses and they'll come up with regulation around every single one or every single industry.
Right.
I don't have any confidence the government would do that now versus it happened again.
The government is key.
Right. No, I'm what I mean is that if some they wouldn't prepare now for that. They'd wait for it to come and then do a 2020, close
Right.
everything down. And then
Right.
versus
Retrospect.
being preemptive and prepare. That's what I'm saying.
Definitely. I mean, I would say that this also, it really depends on the event. There are many different facets or aspects where things should have been done and they've been delayed and they're done after the fact. Maybe when someone took someone to court over a very extreme event and then they're thinking, oh, well, this needs to be regulated. But there are many other times where there is a trauma, a global trauma. Let's look at, for example, October 7, horrific terrorist act by Hamas. It took the government, it's beyond who is governing the country, it's a trauma. And so when a trauma significantly hits, just like 9/11, everyone is paralyzed. And it's not necessarily the decisions are made in a very in a great way, but there is the notion of collective trauma and shock, and it takes time. And in retrospect, probably things could have been done differently as well. But there is a trauma paralysis. And so trauma is, yeah, there is, for example, in Israel, a nation that's in trauma, in collective trauma, feeling that it's going to reoccur. So I would say that, that there is the response of the government, there is the regulatory response, but there is also, interestingly, the government, the people, as people who are affected by all of these events, and it is affecting their decision making as well. It's not.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many other issues around some of the employers that required vax. We're not going to go, they required the vaccine to go to work. If not, you lost your job, and millions lost their jobs because they refused
Right.
to get vaccinated. And
Right.
then the courts determined after the fact that the employees had the right not to get
Right.
vaccinated,
Right.
but they
Right.
lost their jobs in the interim.
Right.
That's a little bit more, I think, removing liberty and freedom than the masking part, because that's injecting something in your body. That's something.
But when you look at it, isn't there a notion of, I mean, what was the intention? Was it the result of panic, a
Yeah.
sense of panic,
No.
not necessarily trying to take away freedom, but panic?
Exactly. And that kind of, if you, we won't have time to go into that, but you peel that back a little bit, that do you lose your liberty and freedom according to the US Constitution when there's some kind of pandemic?
Or
And
threat.
the courts have said that no, the Constitution of the United States stays intact. Your freedom and liberty stay intact. So that's where the conversation was happening. Yeah.
Which is critical. I mean, that these are critical foundational rights.
Right.
So it's a very interesting tension. I mean, that is the fascinating subject of discussion and
Yeah.
should continue to be discussed and spoken and conversed in person,
Yeah.
not really.
No, I got you. I got you. No, I love this conversation with you, Dr. Ayelet. I mean, just in general, having just the honest conversation about what people are going through. And what I'm picking up, at least to wrap it up for our audience, is that there is a trauma that happened as a result of COVID. And I'm summarizing here. Please correct me. Add if I miss something. There is trauma as a result of COVID. Some people have dealt with it in different ways. Some have had, almost PTSD style effects, depending upon what happened to them. They've had it multiple times. They obviously have the fear that connected with fear of death and all these kind of things. And that obviously affects their psyche and how they behave. That may be connected to some of the things you may see outside in the marketplace. Somebody wearing a mask walking out in the air, somebody wearing a mask in the car, someone not wanting to be around people because they got people that died in their family. They had COVID multiple times and they got vaccinated potentially, and it just affected them. So we should be a little bit more compassionate, maybe, and analyze a little bit why they may be doing that. And also asking ourselves, like you put me in the chair, why do I feel, bothered, or why am I critical, or why am I what what's bothering me by seeing them doing that? And so now you're self-analyzing yourself. And so we should be a little bit more understanding and compassionate to understand why, even though you may not interact with that person, you may not know them. You say, well, we don't know what happened there. We don't know what happened in their life. We don't know, why they're doing it. It could be got a whole bunch of reasons. You're
Precisely.
still going to have your own biases, but try to understand why. Is that, did I, please add if I missed anything.
The why, I mean, Definitely. Interestingly, we speak about trauma as a direct experience, and so directly being affected by trauma. We speak about secondary traumatization, vicarious traumatization, compassion fatigue among the professionals such as psychologists, doctors, etc. But then, in some way, when COVID hit, it was traumatic for everyone because it was a real threat for everyone. That's at least how it was communicated initially. And so that, I would say, event as a stressor happened. And that's collectively. So, and that's globally as well, because it was across countries.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to thank you for being on the podcast and the show today. We can easily have other conversations around the topics that came out of this one, just because of it was just it, there's so many things that are interconnected. For those who are listening, we're talking to Dr. Ayelet Hirschfield, PhD psychologist at Diversitas Psychotherapy, and we're gonna put her links in the show notes, and also on the YouTube video that goes live. You know, we'll upload it to our channel, and you'll be able to connect with her if you'd like to talk to her about COVID, but post-COVID, but also other stuff regarding psychotherapy and services based out of California. Thank you for hopping on the call here and the conversation for the podcast to share this. Post-COVID trauma in the workplace, and also what we're seeing just in the marketplace. Be more sensitive, be more compassionate, ask why they may be feeling that way, ask why you're feeling that way, about them, and kind of analyze the whole situation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Gilbert. It was a pleasure, and I look forward to continued conversation.
Likewise, likewise. Thanks so much.
Thank you.